And moving now from fine dining to fine arts. And Boston, of course, is well known for some of its great museums, the Museum of Fine Arts, the ICA, the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum, to name three. But scattered around New England, there are some wonderful lesser-known museums that Sebastian Smee has been visiting and writing about for much of the summer. Sebastian is the Pulitzer Prize-winning art critic for the Boston Globe. He's a frequent guest here on Radio Boston. He joins us now. Good to have you, Sebastian.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So I thought I knew most of the museums around here, but you've made some great discoveries, beginning with the Shelburne Museum on the eastern shores of Lake Champlain in Vermont, which is a fantastic setting. This museum is the legacy of an eccentric and bold collector by the name of Electra Havemeyer Webb. What a great name.
It is a great name, and it's a great museum. You know, I've lived in this part of the world for 4 years now, and I feel so silly because it's taken me this long to get to this museum, even though a lot of people were telling me about it for quite a while. It's amazing. It's just a fantastic museum, quite unlike anything else I've ever been to.
Tell us first about her, because she's such an interesting story in herself.
She is indeed. So she's the daughter of the sugar magnate E.O. Havemeyer and his wife Louisine. They became, she grew up in this sort of ritzy apartment in New York, and it was designed by Tiffany, and they were collecting lots of French art, including French Impressionists. And if you go to the Metropolitan Museum in New York today, half the Impressionist stuff there is from the Havemeyer collection, or a lot of it anyway. Mm. But she was a bit different, perhaps because she grew up in that environment, and she ended up, you know, the first thing that she bought as a collector was a cigar store Indian, and she went on to buy a lot of folk art, and I mean a lot, and not just sort of, you know, any kind of folk art. You go to the museum, and it is just filled with everything from weather vanes and decoys to quilts, and then, you know, amazingly big things, modes of transportation, like an actual train and a train station.
An entire train station. So really, it's an entire campus. It's not just a gallery, of course.
And this is the thing that makes it really special, exactly. Yeah. She not only collected folk art, but folk architecture. So she had all these buildings that she found all around the place brought to the museum, either on the back of a truck or sort of, you know, disassembled and then reassembled again on the campus. Also a huge steamboat that operated on Lake Champlain for many years.
So steamboat, steam trains, an entire train station, as well as galleries of painting and artwork. What stood out to you? I mean, if there was one or two things that really stood out.
Well, I think the two most amazing things to me were an amazing sort of display of circus models, which is a sort of circus parade, and it stretches across a huge sort of C-shaped building. It's just wonderful. You know, you could be absorbed in it for a whole day. My kids adored it as well. And then you go into the apartment, sort of recreates the apartment, and you see amazing paintings by Manet, Monet, Corot, you know, some of the greats of French art. Not a lot of them, but enough to really sort of blow your mind.
So that's the Shelburne Museum in Shelburne, Vermont, on the shores of Lake Champlain. So let's move on to another set of surprising exhibits. These are at the Sterling and Francine Clark Institute in Williamstown, and the theme is China. And once again, one of the exhibits is the legacy of a bold and eccentric collector, Sterling Clark, right, the museum's founder.
That's right. He, again, inherited some money through the Singer Sewing Machine Company and then became a very famous collector and set up this amazing museum that's world famous. But what people and I certainly didn't know was that before he became a collector, he'd spent a lot of time in China, first as a soldier, part of the sort of multinational force to suppress the Boxer Rebellion. And then he conducted this really interesting research mission to China. And there's an exhibit about this mission that he made at the Clark right now. It's fascinating. I mean, they sort of went to a part of northeast China that was really very little known in the West and collected animal specimens, did mapping. It was a really scientific mission of great sort of integrity. It wasn't just a rich man's whim. A lot of the stuff they collected is back in the Smithsonian Institution now. So that's really interesting, just to sort of get a sense of the prehistory of the Clark. But in looking back at this, the Clark has sort of forged connections with China, which it didn't really have before. So there's also an exhibit of stuff that's recently been dug up out of the ground there. China's always digging up amazing things in recent years, but that's a really worthwhile exhibit. And then a set of photographs called Then and Now, which compares some of the photographs that were taken by Clark's mission with those same places as photographed now. So you get a sense of the amazing changes in China.
Sounds fascinating. And in these China exhibits, there are really three separate exhibits there.
That's right,
right?
Yeah, but they're all linked and they're all, as you say, sort of related to China.
And happening as the museum undergoes a big expansion.
Exactly, and a lot of its most famous works are on a sort of worldwide tour at the moment. There's still a lot of great things to see there, and this is just one of them. The parts of the permanent collection are still on display.
So that's three linked exhibits on China at the Sterling and Francine Clark Art Institute in Williamstown. And by the way, we're going to have links to all of these and to Sebastian's piece at RadioBoston.org. Okay, so let's stay in Western Massachusetts and head over to North Adams to MassMoCA, the Museum of Contemporary Art, to an exhibit called O Canada. And this is a survey of contemporary art from our neighbors to the north. And I love what you wrote about this subject in The Globe because it included the term neo-lumberjack abstraction.
Exactly. Not my term. Beaver Dam Earthworks as well. I mean, you know, it's funny. I mean, Canadians have a great sense of humor.
Often so, self-deprecating.
Very self-deprecating. And that was certainly the case in one of the works in this amazing show, full of miscellaneous stuff, as, you know, contemporary art's often like that. But these group shows often sort of fall flat and kind of crash. This is really one of the best I've ever seen. And that mention you made of neo-lumberjack abstractionists comes in a funny sort of like a kind of mock MTV video with a folk song, which just sort of takes the mickey out of the idea of America kind of deigning to bless Canada by showing interest in its, you know, contemporary artists. So there's a bit of fun like that, but a lot of really terrific work as well.
And I gather that this exhibit includes artists without huge international profiles. Is that right?
Yeah, you know, there are five or six Canadian artists with international reputations who are just huge, and they've kind of deliberately left them out. And that's, you know, that was a great decision, I think. I mean, speaking as an Australian, I'm sort of so conscious of the fact that, there are a lot of great Australian contemporary artists, but they're just not known outside of that country. And I think it's a similar phenomenon with Canada.
Well, I was going to say, I'm not too aware of many shows of Canadian art outside of Canada. So what does that say? I mean, what does this show say about Canadian contemporary art?
Well, I think it says that it's incredibly dynamic. There are some brilliant, brilliant artists, both young and old. And, you know, it's just like a lot of contemporary art, it's incredibly eclectic. But, some amazing things were there. And one of them was a work by this guy, Graham Patterson, who's still in his 20s. It's called The Mountain. And it's very hard to describe, but it's essentially a sort of makeshift model of a mountain with inside it, if you look inside, artist studio mock-up with all sorts of details which are just all connected but sort of overwhelming in their intricacy. And it's a very eccentric sort of vision, but just carried through with such conviction and such dedication. It must have taken him years to make. It really blew me away.
So that's O Canada at Mass MoCA out in Western Massachusetts. You know, Graham, we sort of alluded to this in the introduction. Sitting here in Boston, when you talk about art and where to find it, it's easy to overlook how much great art there is scattered all around this region. You've given us some great suggestions here. Do you continue to be surprised by how much is out there when you venture beyond Boston?
Absolutely. I mean, it's an area that's incredibly rich in these amazing, you know, museum collections. And also, you know, a lot of these places put on wonderful temporary shows, and I think they're often focused in the summer months. So for me, this is a great time of year to get out and about.
Well, Sebastian Smee, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It was fun.
That's Sebastian Smee. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning arts critic for the Boston Globe. And you can find links and more information about all the exhibits that he told us about and more at RadioBoston.org.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com.
Our show is produced by Jessica Alpert, Dan Mawsey, Amory Sievertson, and Melissa Galvez. Our interns are Michelle Woodward and Megan Dooley.
We've been having help this week from Aisha Siddiqui and Shannon Dooling. Tim Skog is our technical director.
The executive producer of Radio Boston is Mark Navin.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.